Welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 502. My name is James Gilmore. Joining me today, it's Rick Cowley.
Hello.
Like from the olden days when you and I used to sit and chat about games.
It's a warm, nostalgic hug on this cold Friday afternoon morning.
It is.
What time is it?
It's almost afternoon, I know. Time has no meaning, especially when PGC is on the horizon. I will be seeing you in physical form in a couple of days.
Yes.
I meant that was a sigh at the general like anticipation of the effort and mental breakdown that's to come. Not at seeing you, Rick. You're lovely.
Of course. I'm looking forward to our almost annual trip to Wagamama's.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, that's the kind of highlights that you can look forward to on next week's show when we talk about Poggiemi Connects. It's happening. It's London. We've mentioned it before. If you're coming down, fantastic. I think some tickets are still available, but it's pretty much rammed in there right now. We're expecting over 2,000 people in this one and a half buildings. You've had to expand. It's going to be sweaty.
It's just so many people.
It really
is. And so many great talks.
You sounded sarcastic. You can't sound sarcastic.
No, I was trying to sound like an ad person.
Yeah, that's true. We should sell the brand. So many good talks to experience. But there are five different, we call them track rooms, but they're basically rooms where talks are being held. And there are five rooms this year that run for both days. And so it's hundreds of speakers talking about their things, about their games and their productions and how to be good in the industry and how not to be good and how to game the free-to-play system, as anyone who follows like online free-to-play controversy will find that one of our videos got used as an example of, look at them, these free-to-play people, they're coming in here and they're manipulating our minds and they're bragging about it. I forget who did it, but someone did it and used our video as
Excellent.
An example.
Well, you know, no coverage is bad coverage.
Quite.
That's what they say.
And to be fair, appearing at our show is not an endorsement. These guys are standing up and saying this is how we make games. And some people were like, my God, that sounds manipulative. And I watched a video and I was like, yeah, it does. I cannot disagree.
Hey, whatever works.
Shines a light on it. That's what we're here for. So, speaking of, we're going to be doing some news business up front, talking about Genshin Impact and how it absolutely has not ripped off Breath of the Wild. No, sir. The slow and final death of Mobius Final Fantasy. We've also got information about the Nintendo World theme park and Google Stadia and how it is faring in the mobile world. Plus, new releases including the likes of Pascal's Wager, Warface Global Operations, and more. But first, the news. So I hadn't heard much about Genshin Impact. Apparently it's caused a bit of controversy.
Yes, you may have seen in your research that someone, when it was first announced for PS4, someone like just destroyed their PS4 in the crowd.
Really?
Why they had taken a PS4 to an announce event, I don't know. But they just absolutely trashed it because they hated it so much or something. The response to it has been so incredibly negative, and the only reason for that is because it looks a bit like Breath of the Wild.
Yeah. Which it does. More so in the mechanics of it. Like, the art style does look quite different. It looks much more anime-inspired. Mm. But in terms of, stamina meters, cooking mechanics, enemy designs, etc., it does have a lot in common aesthetically and functionally, it seems, with Breath of the Wild. And this has angered people in a way that apparently inspired machine violence.
I wasn't aware of that. I feel like the outrage around it is really weird, mostly because it was a matter of time before someone did this. Like, it was only it's taken, what, like 2 years for it to finally happen, which is the usual development time of a game. So we're gonna start seeing this kind of Breath of the Wild-esque titles start coming out from a lot of developers, I think.
Well, when a game gets lauded as like the best game of a generation, etc., everyone inevitably goes, oh, really? Is that right? that sounds very successful and profitable. I should do something similar.
Exactly.
Which we'll be talking about later with Pascal's Wager. But the reason we're mentioning it here is because it's coming over to iOS and Android, which is interesting, and they're doing an open beta. They had a closed beta, which apparently has gone fine, and this open beta will be kicking off at some point in Q1 2020, which means the first bit of the year, basically. and you can get involved. They are looking for people to sign up. So if you want to see what all the fuss is about, if you want to challenge yourself to look at this game without destroying your console immediately afterwards, or mobile phone in this instance, don't do that, because your phone probably costs more than your console, then you can go over to the official site where they're taking registrations. We've got a link on the story on pg.com, so check that out if you want to. Sticking with the whole RPG thing, a Mobius Final Fantasy, which like made my brain go bing, and then I had to Google, and it sounded like something I'd reviewed, which I did, so I went back, and I think maybe, 2016? Something like that?
I believe so. I believe, yeah, it first launched in Japan in 2015,
yeah,
and then it took a full year before it came over to anywhere else.
That's right. So it's the Final Fantasy mobile spin-off, one of the earlier ones that is going, right, we'll take bits of Final Fantasy, but instead of being a direct port, we'll actually optimize it for mobile and make a whole different game. And so it takes the traditional kind of 3-on-3 Final Fantasy fighting, but it mixes it with kind of a bit of a card game. It was kind of like, we weren't jumping up and down about it. But it's been going for half a decade until... Let me find the date. June 30th of 2020, which will be the end of service. Aww. R.I.P. Yeah.
But it's interesting, though, because the Japanese version actually ends on March.
Oh, yeah.
Because I did a small interview with the producer, I think it's Yoshinori Kitase, who is the general Final Fantasy producer, and he said that like it takes quite a while to do all the translations and stuff. Right. So the rest of the world has been massively behind Japan in terms of the storyline. But they are going to finish the story in the rest of the world before the game shuts down. So anybody who is playing it will get to see the end of the game, as it were. And then almost immediately afterwards, the game will be shut down. You can never play it again.
So sprint to the finish
for
the rest of the globe. It's clearly gone on, been profitable for long enough to go on for several years, because often these live service games, if they don't work, you know, they'll get shuttered within 1 to 2 years.
Yeah.
So
I think it's interesting as well, because shortly after Mobius Final Fantasy came out, Final Fantasy Brave Exvius was the other one that followed it up. And that went on to be huge, like much, much bigger than Mobius Final Fantasy ever was, because that had like partnerships with Ariana Grande and Katy Perry most recently, which is just utterly bizarre. It's just for a hardcore JRPG to have that kind of partnership is super weird.
Was it just promo stuff, or are they putting like Katy Perry skins into a Final Fantasy game or something?
I don't know about Katy Perry. Ariana Grande was in the game in her like full-on leather bunny costume.
Oh, I suppose that fits with a lot of the Final Fantasy stuff. There's an entire race of them, aren't there?
Yeah.
Final Fantasy. Final Fantasy 14 has got an entire race of bunny women. And in fact, one of them is a major character in Final Fantasy 12.
Well, fair enough.
So she fits right in.
Fair play. But yeah, she recorded a song for it as well. And then you could get her as a character, which is super bizarre. But it was clear that Square was like putting a lot more effort into Brave Exvius and running that. And Mobius Final Fantasy was far more of a hardcore... It was a difficult sell for people, I think.
Right.
So I'm amazed, honestly, that it's lasted this long, because I know within like a year of it being released, they basically stopped talking about it in their financial releases. So they usually, they will talk about like the biggest mobile games, and it was always Final Fantasy Brave Exvius, and then no mention of Mobius Final Fantasy. It's not unsurprising that it's coming to an end, but it's still kind of, it's always a bit sad when a game gets shut down, I think.
It is. And then it's becoming more and more common as more and more games are based around live service.
Mm.
So you can't just do that thing where you drag out a 25-year-old game and play it, because these things will now sort of cease to exist unless people set up virtual servers and stuff for things like Diablo 2. But even then, I don't think with this stuff, it's going to be A, way more difficult, and B, people aren't going to be that bothered enough to try and like reverse engineer it. So June the 30th is the date. So if you want to try and complete this thing and get the full experience, best do so by then. Now, let's talk Super Nintendo World theme park. I'd heard that this was happening, but I didn't realize it was quite this far along. So Universal has unveiled its grand plans to build its Super Nintendo World theme park expansion. The idea here, they're trying to do we're bringing the video game to life. And you can wander around and all the little promo shots look like you're actually just, you know, troping about the old Magic Kingdom or whatever. That's Disney, isn't it? Magic Kingdom.
Mushroom Kingdom.
Mushroom Kingdom, that's...
You were so close, and that's to be admired.
Never mind. And there's a little video they've put up showing you stuff. So, what are we excited about with this? What are they trying to do to get us through the doors?
So, the main thing is that it's going to have... In Disney parks, you get a wristband that like clocks where you are and you can track things and you've got an app that you can follow ride times and stuff like that.
Right.
This Nintendo park is going to have the similar thing. But the difference will be is that it has... I think it has like an AR mode to it as well.
Mm-hmm.
So as you're wandering around the park, you can move your camera around and then you're picking up coins as you go and fighting enemies somehow. So it's going to be like a traditional theme park with rides and stuff like that. But also, you will be playing an AR game at the same time. And I believe plans were that you could then take that progress away with you, and then I guess you can come back at a later time and keep playing. So it's not just going to be limited to single visits. It will be like a continuous game.
That's one way to encourage repeat ticket purchases, I suppose.
Yeah, they actually have started construction on the thing already.
Yeah,
and there's been like leaks of pictures from other parts of the Universal Studios park in Japan. You can see like certain towers being put up and that kind of thing. So it sounds pretty cool. I like the idea of this Mario Kart ride.
That's what I was going to say. There's your guaranteed big hitter there. You have a Mario Kart theme park ride. The kids will enjoy that. The kids know Mario Kart.
I'm very curious good. To see how they pull that one off, if it's just going to be like go-karts or bumper cars or something like that, or if it's like a full roller coaster-esque driving experience. I think they had a similar one in Disney, I believe, but I don't know.
Well, I've been to Universal in, not Florida, the other one, the one in LA. That had at least one ride, which I believe was the Simpsons ride, and it used to be the Back to the Future ride, where you are in a car and it does sort of emulate the idea of you controlling it, but it's all a sort of wraparound visual 3D kind of experience.
Okay.
They could do that if they wanted to do rather than it just being a roller coaster. It seems to make sense that you sit in a little cart and then, you know, drive around and stuff. What else can they do here that's sort of Mario themed, beyond just roller coasters and that happen to have like Mario on the side of it? You have a trampoline area, and the trampolines all look like mushrooms.
A trampoline area, but above you, you've got like
a blocks.
Yeah, blocks that you can punch as you're jumping up.
That sounds potentially dangerous and
dangerous.
Lawsuits incoming, but they need to do something with pipes. You need to be like going through pipes to get to different areas.
Yeah.
That's got to be a thing, surely.
Surely Bowser's castle has to be in there.
If you go in with your girlfriend, she's immediately kidnapped. Just do a full immersive experience. I just went to that Stranger Things secret cinema, which went full immersive. So I'm now thinking in that regard, speaking of lawsuits. Kidnap girlfriend and you have to get her off a large man dressed up like a dragon turtle.
I just love that image of just like... You're at the gates and like a big burly security guard comes over to you and goes, "Is that your girlfriend?" And you go, "Oh yes, it is actually." And they just grab her and run off.
And I go, "Mamma mia!" And then I go, chasing after her. That's it. That's what I'm here for. So they're going to be rolling this one out apparently in summer in Japan. And this is going to be part of the 2020 Tokyo Olympics. And then after that's had its grand unveiling, they're going to smash it out in Florida and California and all the other places. I will probably go back to Universal somewhere at some point, so maybe I can swing by and see this. I won't bring the wife, though.
Just in case.
Just in case. Lastly, let's talk Google Stadia. Stadia. I still haven't decided.
Yeah, neither have I.
It came out, had a bit of a wobbly launch, as we acknowledged at the time. For example, I know barely anyone who's actually got one, and being as I am friends with people who play games, that is probably a bad sign. And the mobile launch was an odd one because it kept getting pared down over the course of the year from originally being this kind of, it's going to come out, you're going to play all your games on mobile, on iPad and iPhones, everything. And then that became like, no, it's not going to come to iOS actually for quite a while. Like, okay, fine, you only play on Android. Oh, well. And then that turned into, actually, no, you can't play it on Android, you can only play it on the Pixel phone. And you're like, oh, okay. And only this model Pixel phone as well. You're like, all right, so basically I can't play it, is what you're saying. So it came out, and we've got now stats for the downloads for the past few months. And what we're finding, according to the article as penned by Matthew Ford, who wasn't here, is that the mobile apps have halved since their installs initially.
So it's come to a total of 550,000 installs, approximately. This is using data from Sensor Tower that our old friend Craig Chappell got for us, former editor of PG Biz. So it managed to get 383,000 downloads in November, and then that figure has dropped considerably. So quick maths, like 100 and something.
Yeah, which is kind of the fall off you get in cinema tickets.
Yes.
When you know, the opening weekend, and then you expect around about a 60% drop for the next weekend. Yeah, so it's a weird one to read, because on the one hand, that doesn't sound great. You want sort of consistent downloads. On the other hand, there's obviously going to be a spike at the beginning. That's how these things work. And then it depends how long the tail is. But the main issue is, like, what you've got there, that 550,000 people, does that just, like, indicate the number of people who are interested in this thing who happen to have the right phone? You know what I mean? Because, like...
So the app isn't just for playing the games. You can also use it. So it is on iOS, and you can use it for managing your account and setting up which game, and like buying games and that kind of thing.
Right.
And the Android version does have that same capability, but also on Pixel you can play games on it. So obviously downloads are weighted heavily to Google Play, so Android downloads are much, much higher than iOS since it has far more capability. But it does mean that in theory... This is because anybody can download it. It's a free app. So there could be people who are just downloading it to prod at it and have a quick look around the menus and stuff. But what you would expect is that people are downloading it to manage their accounts and stuff. So what we're probably looking at, in theory, is the number of people who have bought a Stadia and are now using it in some capacity. It sort of indicates that Stadia sales in general have massively dropped off. Obviously, we can't say that for certain. We don't know that that's the case.
No.
But it's sort of that's what it indicates, because the app itself is so much designed for a specific use case that it would be very odd if people were downloading it to just do anything else.
And you're saying that people would download, even if they can't play, they're using it like the, I don't know, Windows or the Xbox Live app or something like that to manage, which I do, I think I have on one device. But that said, I mean, I use my Xbox all the time, but I don't use that app to track games and that, so...
But I think there was something about... I'm sure at the start of the when it first launched, it was the only way you could sort of interact with the Chromecast initially. Right. I don't know if that's the case now. I honestly haven't kept up with Stadia because I just have no interest in it as a technology.
No, and I wouldn't be surprised if this is indicative of what you're suggesting it is, because it's not like this has suddenly made a huge splash and now everyone I know has got one because it turned out that it was brilliant. It had a rocky launch and people were a bit underwhelmed and there weren't enough games, and those games that were exclusives got pulled, things like, not exclusives, but were going to be like day and date, things like Doom Eternal and stuff. And as a result, I don't know anyone who's playing this, really.
No, but
a shame.
Google is stepping up its efforts.
Oh, really?
Been some news. Well, this morning they announced that they are partnering with BT in the UK, you can now get certain broadband packages will get you a free Stadia if you're into that kind of thing looking for a new broadband. What was the other thing? Oh, they've said they're going to launch at least 120 games in 2020, I believe.
Right.
And 10 of those games they're going to have 10 games by May that will be timed exclusives on the Stadia. So it's
okay.
So they're going to basically like go to publishers and say, we'll give you some cash if you will keep it off other platforms for a few months.
So they're going to do the Epic Store thing.
Exactly. And that worked wonders for Epic, because nobody would have gone into Epic unless they started doing that kind of thing.
No.
And obviously Google has the cash to sort of provide a decent enough incentive to get that exclusivity.
Totally.
It might suddenly... 2020 might end up being the year of Stadia, as, you know, better broadband becomes available across the country and everywhere else, and 5G starts hopefully taking off and all that kind of thing.
It was always going to be a bit of a slow burn with this. And because of the launch, over the course of the year, we were tracking it going like, this is turning into a bit of a cluster fudge. And it would have almost made sense just to not launch it when they did and just wait for a year and then go, bam, here's 20 exclusives and all of this stuff. But this is what they call disruptive technology, isn't it? And these things can sometimes come out and go smash, and overnight the world changes, or they introduce it doesn't really work for a bit, and then eventually it works, and then suddenly everyone's using it and you didn't even really notice. It's just now this is what everyone does. And it could be that. That said, I got a stat here saying that the number of Destiny 2 players which are on Stadia versus the rest of the platforms it's available on is 0.7%.
Oh, God.
So, like, about 9,000 players logged into Destiny 2.
Ooh,
and this is a stat from PC Games N.
That's wild, because that's a free-to-play game.
Yeah.
That's real bad. Oh.
Compared to, like, 550 logged in on Steam. Oh, dear. But maybe it'll all change.
You never know. It's still got a long time to change its efforts and change its fortune and that kind of thing. So I'm sure we'll see some big changes in 2020. Whether they will work is a whole other ballgame.
Well, the big test is when it comes to all of Android and iOS.
Yes,
that's when we go, right, okay. Suddenly the install base goes up exponentially, and then if people get on board then, and there's always this thing with like live games and free-to-play games like this. Destiny 2 is only interesting if your friends are on there, and unless all your friends have Pixel phones, then they're not going to be on there, so why would you play it there? So plenty to keep an eye on for the future. Now, Matthew Ford isn't here, and he's the person I would usually go to with the words, so Matthew, Smash Bros. And then a 20-minute monologue would happen.
Do you say bros in like in that way?
I will, yeah.
Why?
Because I don't play it and it annoys people. I'm just being a prick, that's all.
And it's working.
Thank you. But you're here and you know a bit about it, so I understand there's a thing happening or a new character or whatever it is that happens in this stupid game.
This is just wild to me because I spent 35 to 40 minutes yesterday watching this whole video and enjoying every second of it, and then it's like talking to your mum about it and her being like, so what's this Smash Bros. Thing you're talking about?
So can you be a Luigi? Is that what... and then you hit a Metal Gear in the face, whatever.
You can do that, so, you know.
I know. I know more about Smash than I let on. All right, so new character, right?
New character. Final character of the Fighter's Pass, which has 5 characters in it. And it's Byleth from Fire Emblem Three Houses, both the male and female variant thereof.
Mm-hmm. I haven't played that, the Three Houses one. That's the newest one, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really, really good.
Is that the creepy teacher one?
Yes.
Yeah, it's nice.
Ignore the creepy teacher part. You're the same age as all your students. It's fine. But
love to hear when games have to put that caveat in. Always a good sign. Yes, so, I know they look 12, but trust us, according to the law... Great, mate. Great, yeah. Good hill to die on.
Anyway, so there were some concerns because there's already like 7 or 8 Fire Emblem characters in Smash Bros.
Right.
Which is far too many, and most of them are sword fighters. And again, Byleth is typically a sword fighter, but you can use different weapons because you're the main character and you can choose what your special item is going to be.
So characters like Marth and Lucina, Ike,
yes,
and Roy and Shulk, for example, as I well know.
Indeed. Although Shulk is not from Fire Emblem.
Oh.
That is from...
Well, then this Google search is completely wrong. I mean, my memory is completely wrong.
So, the interesting thing is, while Byleth will typically use a sword, you also have like a range of different weapons to immediately switch between. So your different special attacks will use different weapons. So you've got a giant axe for your side swipes, you've got a bow from a neutral stance, and you've got a lance, I think, for a different one as well.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be switching between 4 different weapons as you're playing, which is really interesting. It'll provide a lot of like different combos that you can do. I'm really interested to see how like the proper fighting game people use Byleth. Because there's so much variety in like the attacks and stuff that I think it'll be very interesting, like high level play. Unless it turns out the Byleth sucks, which is entirely possible because apparently they do not have much mobility, so they're quite slow. They're a bit clunky. They can't jump very high, so recovery might be an issue. The other thing is that they get so there's going to be 11 music tracks from Fire Emblem Three Houses added, including 2 new arrangements of the main theme. There is a new level that will move between 4 areas of the Garak Mark Monastery, which is the main hub world of Fire Emblem Three Houses, which is really cool. And they also added some new Mii fighter costumes. So you can now play as Altair from Assassin's Creed in your Mii fighter. Okay. You can dress up as a rabbit if you really want to, for whatever reason.
They're so wacky.
There's a couple of new Mega Man outfits, but the really interesting one is Cuphead has been added.
Oh,
so right. You can now, if you're using a Mii gunner character, you can dress up as Cuphead, and they've changed the animation. So usually the gunner has like a big arm cannon like Mega Man does on their arm. Yeah. Instead, they will operate like Cuphead, so they like snap their fingers and snap fingers to fire bullets and stuff. And I think that's really interesting and cool to see them like adapting costumes that cost 75p to this extent to like match other games. So even though Cuphead's not a full fighter, you've still got like the Cuphead experience in Smash Bros, which is bizarre and beautiful in so many ways.
They do turn into these Frankenstein's monsters of games, don't they? Mm. Like, by their very nature, the Smash Bros, they're constantly just like bolting, adding more stuff and more characters and more things onto it. I particularly like, and I don't play, I don't have the console, or I'm not really a fighting game guy, but they do seem to put a lot of attention to detail, specifically bringing the music tracks over and then remixing them for each character. That's a really nice touch. Yeah. If I was a player of that game, I would love that, having the familiar characters coming in and then hearing, you know, some version of their themes. Like, that's good attention to detail.
And there's usually, like, I think there's about, like, 200, 300 tracks in there now.
Wow.
And you can just put them on in a music player and just have those to listen to.
Well, I can already hear Matthew Ford listening to this and nodding furiously along. Very excited he is by all of this. So hopefully you are too. So more Smash Bros. Stuff to come. Out and about this week, the Pascal's Wager. Annunciation. I think you're just calling it Pascal's Wager now. This has been in development for a little while, and we saw this back in 2018, I think. And it's noteworthy because we were chatting about that game earlier, Genshin Impact, which people looked at and went, oh my god, it looks like Breath of the Wild, almost exactly. Well, Pascal's Wager is a Soulsborne-like game, and it is unashamed about it. But I've played about an hour of it. You've played a little bit too, I think.
I have not touched it. So please tell me everything about it, because it looks like, I've seen videos and screenshots, it looks gorgeous, but I'm curious as to how it actually plays on a smaller screen.
Well, we've played a bunch of games in the past that have kind of gone this way. So there have been games that have been inspired by it. So I'm thinking about things like, go all the way back to 2014, 2015, you had Wayward Souls, mm-hmm. which was a top-down 16-bit thing that had the ethos of a Dark Souls, where it's like, it's harder and respawning enemies, and this one had a roguelike quality to it, so you were going randomized levels. You had Grim Valor, which was kind of doing a side-scrolling thing back in 2018, but borrowed the aesthetic and some of the difficulty. And then the closest thing I saw where it's like, okay, now you're really going for it, is a game called Animus, which was also out at the end of 2018. Mm. And that was the full third-person perspective, really does look quite a lot like Dark Souls. This has upped that even further where, you know, if you told me that, if it wasn't for the kind of the art design and things like that, if you told me, like, this has come from software and they're trying to do a mobile game, I would go, all right, I see, yeah, I can see that. Because so much of it, the way it's presented, the gigantic bosses, the way that even the health bars appear, the potions, the saving at bonfires, but the bonfires aren't bonfires here, they're these kind of statue ornament things, these stone sculptures with an egg in it. It's all there. All your Soulsborne stuff is there. And I guess good stuff first. It is clearly the most impressive looking and most accurate facsimile of this kind of thing to appear on mobile, mm-hmm. I think. Person is clearly a big fan of the games and has sort of understood what people like from them. So, and it goes beyond the superficial. So, of course, it looks a bit grey and grim and grimy. A bit too grey, grim and grimy. It's a bit samey, to be honest with you. But when you take things like the levels, which are self-contained, they don't have that sprawling open world that Dark Souls has. This is more of a Demon Souls thing, where they're like, you can warp into each individual world. But they do have that aspect of, they loop back on themselves a bit. So when you go into some area, you defeat some boss thing, and then you realize there's a ladder behind and you can get up and, oh, I'm back at this bit of the earlier level. Oh. So it's got that circularity effect that you get with Dark Souls. It's very keen on you locking onto enemies and then doing the dodging and the parrying and the things like that. The enemies are aggressive. You can kind of predict what they're going to do. You can read their attacks, but I think they're a bit more random. But it's not as anywhere near as difficult. It is aggressive. Like, they'll attack you and they'll take half your energy off in one swipe, and you only have 3 health potions. But anyone who's played Dark Souls or, you know, Bloodborne for the first time, you can go out and you get battered by the first enemy if you're, you know, not aware of how to play. If you have invested time in these games, this will all feel very familiar and kind of easy in comparison.
Do you think it's easy by design, or do you think it's easy just because.
I've got to imagine it's easier by design, and that's going to be for a number of reasons. Firstly, it is still a mobile game. So the thing with mobile is, you know, what if someone calls you, or what if your phone battery dies, or, you know, there's a bunch of things to consider. And so the closed loop needs to be smaller, basically. Mm-hmm. Mobile play is about short bursts. This isn't really conceding that much to it, because I was wandering around and I had to play for about another... I could have run back, I guess, to the first bonfire I encountered, but in the sort of 40 minutes hour of play, I only encountered two, and I stopped when I reached the second one. So there was quite a long time of me wandering around this area, not finding another place to save, which is kind of brave to do on mobile. But the other reason I think it's a little easier to play with the enemies is the controls, because you're still stuck with touchscreen controls. And this is the thing I think most people will complain about or bounce off of. Because, yeah, there are four buttons in the corner of the screen, which let you do the dodge and a light attack and a heavy attack and a parry. And then there's a context-sensitive button that pops up to lock on, and then there's another context-sensitive button that pops up when you want to pick up objects or open doors and things like that. And so, and then there are buttons in the center of the screen which are for things like, you know, your healing potions or your sanity potions, because there's a kind of sanity meter, because it's pulling a bit from Bloodborne with the horror as well as the Dark Souls, Dark Medieval. And I have accidentally, during my play, pressed, you know, tapped somewhere on the screen, and, oh, I used a potion I didn't mean to use, because that tiny little button was just... happened to be there. Oh no. And you're always going to have this problem. And the whole thing with Dark Souls is that it's a very specific game to play that relies on very deliberate inputs timed perfectly. It's not even that the game is, you know, everyone goes on about how hard it is of course hard, but also it's more just about working out what the game wants from you and then how to play it. And then you lock in and go, no, I can actually play this, normal people can play this game, it's fine. But with this on a touchscreen with no feedback, and yeah, it's always going to be a little bit like, ah, I didn't quite mean to do that. And you're going to get these little imperfections creeping in from you, from the way that you play. And the game has to compensate a bit, I think. Other downsides, I guess, is you start off with the lead character. You can't choose a class system or anything, but apparently you take control of other characters later on in the game. But your guy could not be more Geralt of Rivia if he tried, right down to the speaking with the voice that stuff. So you're like, all right, fine. And you've got a crow that follows you around. He's your... what's the little fairy companion in Zelda? Navi, yeah. He's your little Navi. But he sounds a bit more cockney. So he wanders around, tells you stuff. And there are little submissions in amongst just killing all the little things and then killing a great big thing. You've got, like... I encountered a couple of characters who were like, can you find my son? And you go and fight off some creature-looking things and then find his cape because he's clearly been munched. And then he can report back to her and give her information. And so you get a little, you know, because you can speak to people in the Souls games as well, and they'll sometimes give you little quests. It's got a bit of that in. So people who want the kind of facsimile thing, people are like, I want it but on mobile. This is as close as I've seen.
Yeah.
And I did play it for an hour and was sort of, you know, kind of invested in it when I was playing it and wanted to get to that second bonfire. I didn't just want to quit out of it and lose all the progress. So something must be working. But I do like these games. I'm not a super fan, but I've played, you know, Dark Souls and Bloodborne, and I do think they're great. And it is weird seeing someone just recreate it to this degree.
If you hadn't played Dark Souls and didn't enjoy it as much as you did, do you think that kind of player is going to find it interesting? Because I played a lot of Dark Souls, but I hate it because I'm really bad at it. So if I played it, am I just going to bounce off it because it's too similar, it's still tricky, it's still there?
I mean, probably, because it follows the same framework, essentially.
Okay.
If you don't like hardcore, inverted commas, third-person combat in a grim, nasty, dingy-looking environment where you can't auto-save and you lose health very quickly and then get ported back to a save point where all the enemies respawn and, you know, you have to do it all over again, then no, probably not. You probably won't like that. It's £6.99, so it is going full on, you know, premium game, and I guess there is a subset of people who might go mad for it. Sort of recommended with caveats, I guess. I don't know how to feel about it. It's
weird.
Yeah,
you sound very conflicted. It sounds like you enjoyed it, but you don't know why, and you hate the fact that you enjoyed it.
Well, no, I see what it's doing, and it's doing what it's doing better than anything else I've seen.
Right.
But it is just a weird, like, clone thing. And even when they were doing it on console, you know, Lords of the Fallen, I think, was a very obvious one. And then you had Nioh, however you pronounce it, Nioh, yeah, that one. Which came out, and then Sekiro came out, rendering Nioh kind of pointless. I hear it's actually quite good, so that's... I'm just being a bitch. But, no, interesting one, I guess. Like, I'll definitely do a video. I think we're actually going to review it as well, so check back if you want to see whether to spend your £7 or not in the future. What have you played this week?
Mind Blast! Exclamation mark, exclamation mark.
Mind Blast! Exclamation point, exclamation point. Well remembered. It's got a cat in it.
It's got... Well, it doesn't have a cat in it. It's actually... Oh. They pull the rug out from under you on that one. So this is a game from Neutronized, who did Super Cat Tales and Super Cat Tales 2.
Ah, okay.
And they are obviously excellent. I remember reviewing the first one a while back on PG and thinking, wow, this is really, really good. This is how you do a platformer on mobile. Mm. And so it starts with one of the cats from Super Cat Tales running into a cave and meeting a new character, just to sort of let you know that, yeah, this is Super Cat Tales developer, and it's in the same universe, but this is a whole different game.
The Super Cat Tales cinematic universe.
Yes. So that's quite a cute little nod. It's a platformer, and you're running around and climbing ladders and jumping up and down and that kind of thing, but you're in a cave, and you need to blow up rocks and soil and enemies using TNT that you find littered around the levels. Mm-hmm. And sort of when you start playing it, it's very basic. You're just jumping up and down on platforms, get to the end of the level, and then you've got to start messing with the physics of TNT itself. And what you eventually learn is that it's like really physics based. The initial puzzles are quite easy, and then it starts throwing like, oh, you've got to jump up and press the throw dynamite button so you can throw the dynamite as far as you can to blow up things on the other side of a ravine to make a bridge kind of thing.
Right.
But also, like, then you start thinking, okay, well, how can I mess with the physics more? Because you can push crates around, you can push around the bridges that you make, you can push the dynamite around if you're feeling brave.
Yeah, I saw that. I'm watching the trailer.
So you can, like, pop that down and then just run into it to push it forwards, or you can throw it and then it will sort of bounce back and it might end up bouncing back in your direction. It's like, oh, Christ. Or you can just, like, litter the area with TNT and watch it just sort of bounce about. So I really like that aspect of it, and it's never really... It doesn't sort of come right out and go, oh, this is a physics-based puzzle platformer, you've got to play it like this. It's very natural in the way that you just kind of pick up, okay, I need to be throwing the things around and all this kind of thing. So I think it works pretty well in that regard, and it is a lot of fun. When you're like in the midst of chaos and you've got an enemy coming towards you and a rock and you've only got the one dynamite left and you know you're gonna need to run back through the rest of the level to pick up more dynamite, like that sort of, it's got that kind of compulsion loop of, oh, this is good, this is fun, I want to play the next level and keep going.
And you've got that built-in thing with dynamite where there is always that delayed gratification, isn't it? Where you've got the 3 seconds or whatever it is before the thing explodes.
Yeah.
So there's always that sense of, like, any time now, blah.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just, it's a very cute, very fun little platformer I would highly recommend. I do have a couple of problems with it. The first one is that it doesn't have any checkpoints. The levels are pretty small, but they're a little bit longer than you would sort of hope. Okay. So in the first cut, I only played sort of the first 6 levels because I played it just before we did this podcast, but I am going to play it afterwards because it was great. The last level I played, it maybe took like 5 minutes, which isn't the longest in the world, but you only have 2 hits before you die. And if you die and you're even right at the end of the level, you just go straight back to the start. And that is kind of annoying because you've made it through a gauntlet of other puzzle of enemies and all that kind of stuff. And then to have to just go straight back to the beginning and do it all over again, knowing it's going to be another 5 minutes, it's like, it's a bit of a trudge. It's not it's not the end of the world, but it's still a bit annoying. And some of the controls can be a bit flimsy. So Super Cat Tales, I thought, was really well controlled, and I figured this would be more of the same. But in this game, you've got to climb up ladders, and the climbing mechanics just don't work sometimes. So I instinctively will always jump toward a ladder in a game because it means you get up the ladder faster. But you've got to kind of jump towards the ladder and then press the jump button again to grab onto the ladder and then hold it down to climb up. But if you miss that, then you're screwed up and you have to just start from the bottom of the ladder, and you have to be in a very specific point to actually grab the ladder.
Mm.
And ladders make up a huge part of the game, so it becomes a bit of a problem. And the other thing is that the dynamite button and the go down on a ladder button are the same button. They just change depending on context.
Excellent.
If you just stood next to a ladder and you want to go down, you might end up accidentally throwing dynamite and just wasting that instead. So
cool.
It's a bit... If there was like a separate dynamite button, it would still work fine. And if you sort of like automatically clipped onto ladders when you're going past them, I think that would work as well.
Right.
Or something like that. I just think those controls are a bit flimsy. However, it is free. I didn't get hit by a bombardment of adverts when I started playing it. I haven't seen any in-app purchases. I'm sure there are, but they haven't sort of come up at any point in the first few levels, so it's very relaxed on the monetization. And I would definitely, if you've played Super Cat Tales before and you want more really cute puzzle platformer style stuff like that, definitely give it a go.
Well, you can unlock it, the premium version, for $3.99,
£3.99. Oh, I see.
I think there's an additional thing you can buy for 99 cents. But yeah, I imagine an ad or two will pop up at some point. But that does sound like fun, and Super Cat Tales, both of them are really good.
Mm.
So yeah, totally on board with that one. All right, Mind Blast is the name of that, iOS and Android at the minute. A couple of other new releases while we're here. Warface Global Operations, which you might remember if you were a PC gamer back in around, oh, I don't know, 2013-ish. So this is from Crytek originally. They made this game, and it was a sort of free-to-play-ish, on, you know, multiplayer military shooter. Totally standard. It's a Counter-Strike. It's, you know, any of those things. But it was oddly modern, and by modern I mean back in 2013, it was a free-to-play game with in-app payments and all that kind of business. And it didn't like do amazingly well. It didn't catch on as much then. But it did sort of sound as a bellwether of where the industry was going to go. This is before free-to-play was even a mobile thing. And now they have released a mobile tie-in of that game. So I've played a bit of this, played about 5 matches. It is an online military shooter.
On mobile.
On mobile, and that's about all you can say. In fairness, there's a class-based system. You do get to choose your classes later on after you've played for a bit. Nice frame rates. It's smooth. I was put into matches very quickly. It's got the auto-shoot, you know, function that's become quite standard now, though you can change that if you want to. The games I played were fun. It was just a standard, you know, that warehouse level that you've seen a billion times. It was one of those and a couple of other ones. And it's all just like, you know, it's much of a muchness to these things. This is a perfectly fine version of it from what I played. I didn't get to do loads of upgrades or anything. I upgraded a couple of weapons and things. But, you know, I played it for about half an hour, 45 minutes. And I wasn't appalled. I got shots off. I won. It was fine. It was good. It was all right. But I'm not sure, you know, in the wake of things like the Call of Duty mobile game coming out and other, I guess, more mobile-focused and more cartoony things. I understand Guns of Boom is still going in a big bad way. That multiplayer game from, I don't know, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, is still doing really well. And it does feel just like another one of these.
I've not played the Call of Duty mobile game.
No?
I mean to, but I just haven't got around to it yet. Is it similar to that? Because I've played Guns of Boom, so I instantly was just like, oh, this is Guns of Boom.
Yeah.
Because it was very similar to that. I don't know about Call of Duty, though, and obviously that's the one that everyone's going to be shooting for these days.
Well, this is more similar to COD by the grounds of its, you know, military-based FPS with all the little upgrades, and Guns of Boom is far more Team Fortress-y and cartoony and easier to access, I guess.
Yeah.
But Call of Duty Mobile one's quite good, actually. You know, again, if you're into that kind of thing. And the, you know, install base is so large that you're always going to get matches and, you know, and there's always going to be updates and everything. Whereas something like this, it's a bit more questionable how long it'll be supported and all of that. But that's not to say that it's not totally playable, because it is. And I enjoyed the matches that I played. I didn't feel like betrayed by the controls, and everything worked the way that it should. So it's military shooter. So, that's available right now for free. Warface Global Operations, iOS and Android. And the ones that I haven't played but did come out this week, we've got Maze Machina, which arrived on iOS and Android, which is from Tiny Touch Tales. And basically, you take control of this little tiny mechanical mouse who's on a grid, and you have to move them around because the grid forms basically a labyrinth. You can do certain things, but those things are determined by the tiles in the level. So if you look at the trailer or something, you can see that there are, for example, combat tiles. A tile's got a sword on it, which means you can attack with a sword. Another tile, when you move onto that one in your turn, it's got a picture of a bow and arrow. So that means you can loose arrows at people. So it's all context-based on your movements, which is quite neat. But that's, I think Hoplite did that as well. So if you're familiar with that, you'll be familiar with this. Haven't played it, looks perfectly nice, but that's out right now on both platforms. That name again is Maze Machina. And the last one was Draw Chili, which I haven't played at all.
I haven't even looked at it. Tell me more.
Super lo-fi. It's doing that, like, the 16-bit art I quite like, which is the ugly stuff that was appearing on the Amiga. They started drawing characters to look a little bit more human proportion-wise, rather than just being, like, you know, Mario's head's the size of his abdomen, that kind of thing. And it starts to head, not in a real way, but into the Uncanny Valley in a bit that's like, I don't know, there's something about that Amiga. Did you ever play a game called, there's a game called Moonstone that's very famous.
I have never heard of it.
No, it looks a little bit like that, the way the characters are drawn, which I approve of. But it's a side-on 16-bit. It's what they used to call elevator shooters. So enemies are just pouring onto the screen and you're just sort of stuck there and you just fight them off and blah, 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 blah. And then apparently you get a squad. You get boosting abilities. This is what I'm reading from their thing. From our thing, rather. But I might try it because the trailer looks quite chaotic and it's giving me slightly grim feelings. And I like grim feelings. These things. It looks a bit anarchic. So Draw Chili is the name of that. So more on that. Go check back with PG for a review later. But that's iOS and Android as well. That'll do us for this week. Thank you all for listening. We are going to be back again at the end of next week, but we're going to be exhausted. I think we should all come back on Friday and go, we're back from Pocket Game.
Just a very relaxed podcast.
Yes, we'll go for a chill one.
Yeah, we'll have a hot chocolate and wrap up nice in some blankets. And
sounds cozy. So come and join us for that, when we'll also discuss all the new games and everything else. Like usual, so thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.